Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, wherever you are in the world, and welcome to a campsite episode of Endurance Chat. I am Flightman 11, and with me, for the first time in 3 years?
About that.
Is Reddit's Worst Night. How are you going?
I'm well. How are you, Flightman?
It has been a fantastic weekend so far, and I'm doing very, very well. We are sitting on the backside of Mount Panorama, looking over the Blue Mountains at the back of the campsite.
Blue Mountains are the other way, mate.
Oh, well, whatever these mountains are, towards the setting sun, which is behind a band of cloud at the moment. Reddit's Worst Night, it has been quite the atmospheric event so far, hasn't it?
It's, yes. Just behind us, you may or may not be able to hear the group playing beer pong.
Classic Bathurst camping.
It's, if you've never camped up here at any event, it's well worth coming up. This event's a bit more quiet than the 1000, but there's still plenty of people who are six sheets to the wind, as we say.
It is a lot of fun, though, and it's been one of the things that I've noticed coming here year on year is that the event itself gets bigger year on year, and there's more people up the top of the mountain, there's more people in the pits, there's just more people around, and it's just a bigger, more involved event. And you came the year before I did as well, but the first time. And would you say, how big is the step from then to now, do you think?
It's incomparable. The first year I came in, ticketing was a printed piece of paper that they scanned it once, they put a sticker on your hand, stamp on your hand when you left. I lost my ticket at some point in the weekend and had to get a spare one out of the car because you could do that. Driving through the entrance gate up the top of the mountain, there was one dude who stamped my hand and told me to jump on the gas. These days, they're like, have you got any glass? Have you got any alcohol?
It's a bit different, but honestly, it still has that sort of rustic, campy sort of atmosphere, which is really, really enjoyable. But on top of that, it's also now getting more and more of this is an international GT3 event atmosphere, especially when you're in the pits. There's a great balance right now between the seriousness of the GT3 field and then the laid-backness and the availability of access of an event on Mount Panorama.
Yeah, it's for me at the moment, I think this is the perfect blend of that professional GT3 racing and just downright fun, camping, hanging out with mates.
Yeah.
And, you know, just having a good time.
And speaking of having a good time, there has been a lot about this event which has been a good time so far for us. I think the first thing, which is something that was brand new this year, was the Track to Town GT3 event where they took 10... That's all right, we'll pause it. Sorry for that little interruption. Reddit's Worst Night just got a call from his wife. Track to Town, they had 10 GT3 cars plus one of the Mark cars do a lap of the mountain at media speed and then head down the main road into Bathurst, the town, park up in the main square in front of the courthouse and then just have the place open access for anyone to come through. And for the first time, what a way to get up and close and personal with these cars.
Yeah, it was my introduction to the new Bentley livery was opening the driver's door of my car and realising that there was a Bentley bearing down on me.
Having it almost taken off.
Better not open that door.
Yeah, we were only just ahead of the convoy, which meant that when we pulled over, we weren't actually able to get out the car before they came past. That was pretty cool. It was really interesting to get so close to the cars in that sort of setting and to have the access as well. Like, I ended up talking with not only some of the drivers, but even Jordan Pepper's dad, of all people, somehow ended up talking to. We ran into Richard Crail, John Hindor and Shay Adam were interviewing people. Did you run into anyone that you actually spoke to at all?
I had a quick chat to Captain Masochio about a protrusion from the Nissan turned out to be the air conditioning.
There you go. So, yeah, it was a fantastic way, and the weather as well, everyone seemed to embrace it. They made it a big thing, and I think my favorite part, which I've shared on Twitter and in the Discord already, is one of the guys from one of the local news stations literally shoved a microphone in my face and a camera over my shoulder and said, oh, you're on TV, oh, well, you're going to be on TV, answer these questions. I'm like, oh, okay. So yeah, I was interviewed for local TV, which, now people are calling me Hollywood. Why?
He's got a face for radio. That's why we're here, guys.
Ouch. Ouch. I'm cut.
I do joke.
Another really cool piece of access that we've got this year, at least us personally, has been right down the end of Conrod Strait. So this is somewhere I haven't actually been down before throughout my time at Bathurst. You can get all the way down to almost just past the kink of Conrod Strait as part of the general access. But the guys in Shakedown, who have had a hand in putting together the Spotters Guide for this weekend, actually have had their campsite or have been allowed access to camp at a private residence which is called Camp Conrod.
Camp Conrod.
Yeah. So it's basically someone's, the last house on Conrod Strait, someone's put a motorhome, basically built it into the landscape, opened it up with a bar, with TVs, with live timing desks, posters, everything. And it's basically just a little, like, a little party house for watching motorsport.
It's an amazing thing. So local planning regulations don't allow you to build too close to the track.
Yep.
So they got around it by building a permanent structure on wheels.
Yeah, exactly right. And so they're there that weekend, and it's actually Grusso and his group, and they invited us down to be a part of, to go down and have a look. And my word almighty, scary cars that close at 300 kilometers per hour. I think my eyes were on stalks watching them go past.
And the noise is something that must be heard to be believed.
And lucky for you, we've got a binaural microphone, which we took some pure sound clips of cars blitzing past that area on track, so you will be able to listen to that noise. But my God, it was absolutely terrifying. And those guys down at Camp Shakedown at Camp Conrod are going to be, they're having an absolute blast. You can see the look on their face every single time you walk past. And we got to be those guys. I never thought watching the Bathurst 1000 for years and years and years that we'd ever be the guys who get to sit at that point of the track and get to watch them go past. It's privileged access, and it's awesome to be a part of, isn't it?
Oh, every year I've been here, and this is my 9th time on the mountain. Every time I've been here, I've walked past that place and gone, what I would give to be standing there.
And there you were. Absolutely.
It was, you know, one of those money can't buy experiences that I am so glad I got the opportunity to have.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And pivoting to another money can't buy experience that I've been able to have, on the Friday evening, thanks very much to the work by... Well, actually, to you guys for being such a good group and allowing us to have a good relationship with people meant that Graham Goodwin actually invited me into the media center on the Friday evening to meet with him and the Radio Le Mans guys and to pass on the gift from Bonnie Lass 47 as a thank you for the This Week in Sports Cars best question of the week thing from late last year. So I was actually able to go into the media center after the last session on Friday, talk to Graham Goodwin for quite a while, and had a chat to the Radio Le Mans guys before they went off to the meetup, which I also went to later. And just to be in that environment with so many big names and media around was just really humbling, and I didn't really come down from that high for a long time. Yeah, it's very special, and that's thanks to you guys. That's thanks to everyone who listens, because without you guys doing what you do, I wouldn't be able to do what I do. Now, Reswest Knight, you've been in the media center before, haven't you?
I actually have. 2015, I had the privilege of being in there, invited by the wonderful crew at Radio Le Mans. I was in there for the press conference after qualifying. Chiyo-san, I believe it was, had just put the Godzilla on pole, and that was an amazing experience to be there for that as well.
How did that even happen?
So I brought along a cousin who was 14 or 15. It was the first time he'd ever watched an endurance race. And being interested in the development of the sport, as I'm sure most of us are, they decided to invite the young kid in and give him a taste and hopefully get him hooked.
Did he get hooked?
Sorry to say, he's racing boats in 3-minute races right now and doesn't do anything longer than 1,000 kilometres once a year. But hey,
Well, I guess that's not too bad. But racing boats are still racing something, right?
It's true.
Unfortunately, it doesn't have wheels, so Radial and One don't care about it. Anyway, another aspect that we've had a chance to get involved in is with the Radial and One meetup. They do one every single year at some of the races they go to, of course, being the only Australian race. They do one in the town of Bathurst. And we actually got to have a bit of a special moment with the crew, again, thanks to Grusso and his work with the Shakedown group, and us helping out with the Spotter's Guide. So not only did the Spotter's Guide get finished, and if you're not using the Spotter's Guide, you damn well should be because it's amazing. Grusso actually went to town, printed off 6 copies on A0 size paper.
It's got to be at least A1, not A0.
So huge swathes of paper, and gave us, kept 3 for himself and the Shakedown guys, gave us 2, and then we both were able to present Radio Le Mans with one for them in the commentary box. And the look on Johnny Palmer and John Hindor's face when we pulled out this massive thing of paper with all the cars on it, it was hilarious. And they were absolutely gobsmacked. Johnny couldn't stop talking about how awesome it was. There's a photo that their social media officer took somewhere of John's face basically on the floor. It was really special to be a part of, don't you think?
As I said, I've been up here a lot of times. I love this mountain. But I think that was one of the most unique and memorable experiences I've ever had in this town. And it's only 3 hours from home.
Yeah, lucky you. For me, it's 13 hours. Oh, my God. Anyway, we should actually talk a bit about what's happened this weekend so far in terms of on-track action. So, of course, we are here for the GT3 cars is what we're talking about. It's now a round of the international Intercontinental GT Challenge, and there's big stakes in that. But as Bathurst does, it always takes its victims, and it was only an hour into running and we'd already lost 2 cars. Has there been a year where all of the cars entered have made it to the grid?
I don't believe so. I know that on the way up, we were having a discussion about how there's this number of entries, but at least someone wouldn't make the start. Of those cars, the one that annoyed me the most, I think, both were bad losses, but losing the Black Swan 540 after their weekend last weekend was just heartbreaking. And the circumstances in which it went, the fact that Pappas is now in hospital in Sydney, could be there for an extended period as well with a fractured pelvis, that is very much an ex-Porsche's going in the bin.
Yeah, we were unfortunate enough to be in the pit lane when they finally brought that car in on the flatbed, and it was about 2/3 of a Porsche and none of the important bits. So for those who haven't seen the images, Pappas was just unlucky enough to lose it in the chase, trying to avoid another car that was slow offline, pivoted the car around, missed the tyre barrier on the first part of the chase, missed the gravel trap on the other part of the chase, and then slammed into the concrete wall. And it was a harrowing incident so early in the running. And, yeah, put the car out straight away. There was no way they were getting that car back. And, yeah, as Wordsworth Knight mentioned, after their shocking weekend in Daytona, 2 back-to-back weekends, the Black Swan guys, they just want to go home.
Yeah, and they've packed up. They've basically all left now. The garage doors are closed. And most of the drivers are already halfway back to see their families.
Yeah, I think the most forlorn image was when we went through the pit lane. They'd already gotten most of the way through bumping out, and all that was left on the ground was just some tools, some equipment, and the American flag hanging from the ceiling. Of course, Tim Pappas being a very parochial, patriotic American, so it was just a really full-on, really sort of solemn mood around that. The other car that's already been scratched was a bit of an unexpected car, I think. And again, from the incident, from the damage, I didn't think it wouldn't been that bad. But the number 3 car has also been shafted from the event. What happened there?
So something happened. We're not entirely sure what. But at the chase again, the end of practice 1, which is the amateur-only practice, something went wrong and it slammed sideways into the tyres at the end of the chase. And, information's been a little harder to come by around this one. But Audi decided it just wasn't repairable.
Yeah, I think there was some rear bar damage with the chassis, so it just made it too difficult to repair with the parts they had. And that was, yeah, as you mentioned, only in the AM session, which meant that two of the drivers didn't even get a chance to drive the car, and they're already going home. So really unlucky for that team and that car. But yeah, Bathurst takes no prisoners, does it?
And the other, well, doesn't take prisoners at all, never does. The other crash of note, really showing that Bathurst takes no prisoners. The 51 of Paul Dallalana made contact with the 888, or might be better described as being the other way around, as the 888 did rear-end the 51. The stewards have decided that the 51 was going too slow and weaving at the time, so that's Dallalana. They missed all of that session and the next session. They were out for the rest of the day. They finally got back on track this morning. If you have downloaded the Spotter's Guide, the front of that car is now black, not red.
It's a completely pure, unmarked carbon.
But they are back on track. And the 888 cleaned out the gravel, did a bit of front end repairs, and were back on track.
It was a bit of a weird one, wasn't it? It didn't seem like there was much in it, yet the damage was so severe. And I think Krause put it best, cars coming together in practice should not be a thing that happens. And so there was a little bit of footage that came out afterwards, but there was it looked like there was befores as well. So a bit weird, not really sure what's going on with that, but it looks like, yeah, the stewards have determined that the 51 was at fault in that instance. It was just a bit of a weird one. Things have, today, the third day of the event, the second day of the GT3 running, things were a lot more calm, and of course everyone was looking to prep their cars for quali. Now, I'm going to let you take us through the top 10 who got into the shootout, because you've been absolutely over the moon by this since it happened, haven't you?
Since the shootout was announced. So I am an unabashed Mercedes fan. And I mean, if you told me four Mercs would be in the shootout, I would have been over the moon. Had you told me the 888 wouldn't be one of them, I would have been very surprised. But here we are. We'll talk about that more later. There are additionally two Audis who are the only other manufacturer to get multiple cars in. There was a Bentley, the 107 car from memory. Yes, the 107. Yep. There was the 912 Porsche, the 62 Aston Martin, which I think surprised everybody. And Imperatore put the 18 KCMG Nissan into the shootout as well.
It's very interesting you mentioned the R Motorsport Aston Martin, because not only did they were they the surprise packet, they put the car on pole. Jake Dennis, that was the top car in that session, and not by a small amount either. Jake Dennis found something ridiculous in their lap, putting the car 0.4 of a second faster than anyone else. Now, 0.4 of a second at a place like Bathurst is astonishing, and it looked like, I don't know about you, but to me, yesterday it looked like that car wasn't really giving it everything, but today they were on the absolute ragged edge all the time, and it showed in the quality results. Like, it was crazy how far ahead they were.
It didn't look fast yesterday. It didn't set blistering times. Yet today, the gap first to second was larger than the gap second to eighth.
Yeah, it was a bit nutty. But almost more importantly are the people who missed out on that top 10 shootout. The guys, as you mentioned, like the 888, not only did they miss out on the top 10 shootout, they came home in qualifying in 19th. So that's where they will be starting on the grid tomorrow, 19th position, which I think everyone's who chose that one for Fantasy WEC has fallen into a bit of the honeypot, I think all of us included.
Yes, but having said that, as was mentioned in discussion by us earlier today, a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, SVG was 17th or 18th.
18th.
And in the last 10 minutes of the race, he was leading.
Not the last 10 minutes, it was the last hour.
Last hour, he was definitely leading the race, and then quite memorably binned it from second, leading Maro Engel to make some interesting comments. But, like, we know that SVG at least has previously found speed in seemingly slow and off-the-pace Mercs. Whether that'll happen tomorrow, I'm not so sure.
Well, you say seemingly slow and off-the-pace, but as you mentioned, there were four other Mercs in the top 10, so it doesn't seem like a Merck problem. It seems like a 888 problem. So what is the problem?
So they're complaining about understeer. Lowndes used the word understeer, push, and doesn't turn in within 30 seconds of it, those phrases, like, in yeah. one conversation. So it could be a setup issue, in which case they could be struggling with it all day, or it could just be them not getting used to the car.
I don't think... See, I can't say... I can't believe it would be them not getting used to the car, because, like, Scott Taylor of Motorsport run the car. Jamie and Sam van Gisbergen have run races in this car. Lowndes is not a slouch. He knows how to drive a car. And all of the other teams... And this is not just, like, Group M Racing or, like, you know, those level of teams. These are, like... Craft Bamboo, whose first race with this car is here, and, like, not necessarily the best caliber. Oh, that's a bit mean. It shouldn't be a team problem. AAA are not that kind of team.
No, that's exactly it. It's the drivers, I do believe, are getting the best out of that car. I think there's something to set up they haven't unlocked. But if it's in those suspension geometry mechanics and that kind of setup, canvas and stuff... I don't see them being able to fix that issue tomorrow.
Really? Okay. Do you think any of the other teams are going to be willing to give them a hand?
And that's the question I was thinking. Like, if it was the AM car and I was 888, I'd be like, yeah, sure. But if I'm looking at that driver lineup and going, if I tell these guys how to fix this problem, I'm potentially gifting them a Bathurst win instead of me.
Yeah.
So I'm not doing it.
I hazard to agree with you exactly. Other notable exclusions from the top 10 shootout are BMW. Neither the Walkenhorst or the Schnitzer BMW made the top 10, which is surprising considering that car was on pole last year and was second on the grid the year before. And the Ferrari, the Hub Auto Corsa Ferrari, also didn't make the top 10. So it was a bit interesting, especially considering that Slade, Percat, and Foster Car had been set the early pace setters. What do you think is up with that? No 888, no BMW, no Ferrari. How did that happen?
I mean, it doesn't make sense either. Because I mean, Paul Dallolana came out in the 51 at one point, when early in this morning's running after they'd repaired the car, and went top of the timesheets. So there's definitely pace in those Ferraris. Whether it was something about the way they use tyres, something else in there, I don't know, temperatures and stuff, but they just didn't turn on in quali.
They'll be starting a bit further down the grid. The highest BMW is in, let me just find it, 15th, oh no, 14th, and the other one's right next to it. And then the Ferrari that we made mention of is much further down the grid. So the 51 is in 22nd, and where about...
The 27, the Hub Auto car, I now recall, didn't get out for the last 15-20 minutes of qualifying.
And that's when all the pace was, so that's why they were so far down. Well, there you go. Interestingly, though, we should make a quick mention of one of the biggest surprises in these other classes... and that would be the Class I cars, Mark Class. So firstly, I got an apology to make. Sorry, MW Clarkson. I kind of messed up with the class divisions. Class I is just way faster than anything else that isn't GT3. So if you didn't choose a Class I car for Fantasy WC, I'm sorry.
More to the point, if you didn't choose a Mark II Class I car, we're sorry.
Yeah. But the cool thing was that Class I car... Okay, so the Invitational Class cars run to an index. They can't do faster than a 2.05 during race, just so that way you don't end up with an Invitational car that blitzes the field, because that doesn't look good for anyone. But in that session, we had Anton Di Pasquale do a 2-minute, 4-second 0.2. So this is faster than some, what, 5 or 6 of the GT3 cars in a Mark car.
Like, what? It was insanity to watch. It was gorgeous. It was insane. The time was deleted, of course.
Yeah.
But
that's not the important thing. The important thing is he did a 204.2.
Yeah. It's, and like, to be here to witness that, it makes me wonder, like, is there any way of homologating these things to GT3 spec?
Please. Pretty please. Pretty please. Yeah, they look really cool. And They've sold, what, now, I think Crazy said the high teens in terms of cars, which means that they're getting out there more. We're going to see more of them, hopefully in places like Creventic and like other 24-hour events like Dubai, and maybe even on the VLN. That would be really cool. If we could see marked cars in the VLN, like...
I mean, you could honestly put them... Or maybe not. See, I'm thinking here N24, but if they're that close... You have to put a speed time limit on them, surely.
Put them in SPX. Problem solved. They can run against the Glickenhaus. Easy peasy.
Okay. Works for me.
So we'll move on to the shootout. The shootout was an interesting session. There was a lot of sunshine on the bottom half of the circuit, but not a lot on top. It was very cloudy up top. And that meant that over the top of the mountain, a lot of cars were setting some really good sector times. But it was the number 999 car of Raffaele Marchiello who set the pace early on. He came out second after Imperatore put in a 204, which was kind of, eh. Marchiello came out and straight away 202.9 to really get the ball rolling. And you were jumping out of your seat at that point.
A massive gap between the two cars. It was clear that either Imperatore was just miles off the pace or that the Mercedes was going to be at the pointy end. Turned out both were relatively true.
Yeah. A lot of the things that what they were saying in the shootout was a lot of talk about the Pirelli tyre. So the Pirelli is the control tyre for this event after we've had different tyres in the past. And they've made mention that it's a bit harder, which means it's a bit more difficult to get the temperature in it, which means that for a shootout context like this, it's a bit harder to get the tyre in the operating window. And it looked like the guys who went out and did that warm-up lap absolutely on the limit were the ones who had the temperature in the tyre, with one exception. And I think that exception is the 912 car of Matt Campbell, who did take a long time roading his tyres in and trying to warm them up and still put a pretty good time in. Unfortunately for Matt Campbell, it just was only good enough for seventh. Some quarter of a second outside second. So that's how close it was in the middle of the pack. Yeah.
But at least for the Mercedes, where we had four samples, good sample size, and most of that pointy end, you've got second and, well, we'll be first and second on the grid tomorrow because of a penalty for the 62.
We'll talk about that in a sec, yep.
So first, second, and fifth on the grid tomorrow are the Mercs, but then there's another one that's down in eighth, and that's the only Mercedes that was wiggling around a lot and not just doing a hot lap.
Yeah, it was interesting the way that different teams approached it. Who do you think will be the most disappointed with their qualifying run out of those guys in the shootout? Before we talk about who topped the shootout.
So for me, it's either Berman and the Team 19 Black Falcon Mercedes, having seen the other Mercedes up at that pointy end, and Berman being such a good driver. You can see why they would really want to be in that top five. But also I can see the number two Audi of Christopher Haase, who again, he did a bit of weaving around and didn't quite make the most of the car.
Or the lap. The Audi, of course, has been traditionally very strong over the top, but he got it all wrong in the S's and almost threw it away in the dipper. So that's where he lost a lot of time.
So both of those teams, yeah, should be disappointed to be down the back. Of the 10, I should say.
I think that the guy who's going to be most disappointed is actually Kelvin Vandalinde. Now, his lap started off awfully. He went wide at Hell Corner, took up a bunch of, like, kicked up a bunch of dust and dirt, and really, it was a really bad way to start the lap. But he came back and was only was half a second outside over the top, including his moment at the first corner, and then found 3/10 of a second in the final sector to only be less than half a second away from that Mercedes AMG time by Raffaele Marchiello. So I think he's going to be the most disappointed because it would have been possible for him to have taken a front row spot in the grid.
When you do bring that up, it's also notable he did that fastest final sector in an Audi. All weekend and in previous years too, we've seen the Audis fastest across the top of the mountain and slow on the straights. That's just the way the BOP works here. It's the way the cars generate their speed.
Yeah.
But he got fast on the straight.
And I think he'll be pretty disappointed that the lap started off as badly as it did. But you have to say the best was saved till last. And the only person to get anywhere near their qualifying time in the shootout was Jake Dennis in the Aston Martin Vantage, and his lap, a 202.49, was a full 0.45 quicker than everyone else. He was on the absolute ragged edge the entire way around, and blimey, that was a beautiful piece of driving.
Yeah, it was incredible, an incredible lap. And timed well as well. I know there's a bit of luck in that,
yeah,
when you're told to go out. But when he was on his warm-up lap, it was the only time all session we saw sun on the track at the top of the mountain. But then come on the hot lap, the clouds were back.
Yeah, and that's really important in making sure the cars generate grip and are in the correct temperature windows. And so he did get a bit lucky, but that lap in itself was ridiculous. So much so that I wish they could waive the two-place grid drop penalty that he got for speeding in pit lane during qualifying.
Mm. But, I mean, speeding in pit lane in qualifying, or at any time, we know, is
a safety issue, yeah.
It's one of the biggest no-nos. It's as bad as reversing.
Yeah, true.
And to be real, 0.4 of a second over a lap, you got 12 hours.
Yeah.
What does two grid places make?
This is true. And they do still get to keep the Alan Simonson Award, which is fitting, I think. And that was presented actually very touchingly by Christina Nielsen, another Danish driver who was whose family was close with the Simonson family. In fact, Christina and her father had actually co-driven with Alan Simonson, and yeah, she just reiterated the point that Alan loved this place and loved Australia, and it was very touching to see her have the opportunity to pass on the trophy to the winning team.
Definitely.
So the grid for tomorrow, we will have the 999 on pole. Next to them, the number 77 Craft Bamboo Black Falcon car. So all Mercedes front row, which you're all very happy about. The 62 car lines up third behind next to the Bentley. The 777 AMG. The only car in the field, by the way, in the shootout that was driven by a V8 supercar driver, which is a very interesting point.
And also one of only two AM cars to make the shootout.
This is true. The other one being the Yelmer Berman T19 car, which lines up in eighth. Ahead of them is the Audi Sport number 22, then the 912, then the aforementioned 19, and then the number 2 Audi and the number 18. As we mentioned, the car that is probably everyone's favorite to win the 888 is in 19th. So, where does that leave us tomorrow? We've got race start in total darkness, of course, before twilight, and dawn crests across the far side of the track, over the chase first, and that's always going to be a bit special, isn't it?
It is. Something I think is worth pointing out here as well is a very interesting stat for a 12-hour race. This race has never been won from worse than 7th on the grid. So if 888 are going to win, which I'm sure some people will still be saying they are.
Yes.
They've got their work cut out for them.
They've got to make history.
Yeah. It's the other Mercedes are all in position to potentially do so. I think there's only 5 Mercs in the field and 4.
Six.
Have I forgotten one?
No, you're right. 5.
And 4 of them are in that, or 3 of them are in the top 7 and 1 sitting in 8.
So yeah, they're looking pretty, real pretty. I'm actually surprised about the lack of pace for the BMW, mostly. That one has taken me a little aback. So I'd like to see them maybe come up through the field. But I think something that we were talking about before we started recording, we saw in the shootout that the Audis in particular struggled to turn their tyres on. Now, is that going to be a problem?
I don't think it will. I think it's going to actually work in their favour. If you can turn tyres on really quickly, then it means you're going to wear through them more quickly, potentially. But also, Bathurst is Bathurst.
Mm.
And if there's a late safety car, tyres start to cool off, then it could definitely work against them.
Mm. Well, the forecast tomorrow is pretty warm, so I doubt if the tyres are going to cool off, they're going to cool off that much, especially at that point in the day where it is, you know, 5 in the afternoon, right in the middle of prime time, and it's just all about that that real big push to the finish.
That is true. So track will be hot.
Track will be very hot and very rubbered in. So, okay, from the cars that we've talked about and the ones that we haven't, What is your pick for a top three? Give us a top three.
A top three. 62 is going to be somewhere up there, I think. As long as they have a clean run, they've got the pace. I can't see them finishing outside the top five without something majorly going wrong.
That's a pretty big endorsement as well. We kind of got blown away by their pace throughout the weekend, because as we said, it was kind of nowhere yesterday.
And then from there, and this is, I might be showing my Mercedes colours.
Yes, you are.
But I've got three other possibilities to make it in. The 999 and the 777, I think, are good chances. The 777 is a AM car worth noting, or a pro-AM car.
Yep.
Which, as long as I can stay on the lead lap, again, things might happen. But the other car, or the other make that I think is a serious chance, they've been quick all weekend, particularly in a straight line, which matters here because that's where you can overtake,
yep,
is the Bentleys.
Bentleys always seem to pop up at Bathurst. They do have a bit of a history here, but they've never actually taken the win. How much do you think it would mean to them to finally crack it in their 100th year, to begin their 100th year?
I think there might be a river of champagne in pit lane.
Oh, we'll get down there and start drinking it. Yeah, so I think I would say that the 999 has probably been the strongest car of the weekend so far. So I'd put them in the podium. I don't see the 777 getting up there. They seem to start strong, but I don't think... Look, Yasser Shaheen, he's a great AM, but he is still an AM. So,
exactly.
So they're going to struggle even with Davey and Yildin in the car. I think actually the 912 has looked pretty... They were a bit of a sleeper in the early practice sessions, but in qualifying they kind of blew out of the woodwork and did something really amazing.
Now you're just showing your colours.
I mean, yeah, but whatever. And then for that last position, I have to choose another Merc. I think the Craft Bamboo car has been on the pace when it needs to be, so that would be my next pick. So 999, 912, and 77. I would like to see how far up that 888 car goes, if only for my fantasy WEC results, please. Please, pretty please.
I would like to see it score some points in fantasy WEC,
yeah.
But I mean, I might have won the thing last year, but I think I'm already out for this year.
Hey, I'm right in the hunt. I want to take that throne back. Come on, give it to me. Give it to me. Give it to me. sorry about that. There's been a bunch of other stuff happening on track as well. Of course, we've got the support of events that we'll talk about a bit later. But the thing that has really wowed everyone around the circuit, and by the looks of it as well, around the world, is the demonstration laps for the new Brabham BT62. Basically, yes. Oh my God, yes. We thought demonstration laps would mean they'd just kind of potter around at a bit of pace, but no, not even a little bit. What have they been doing, Brett's first night?
I manually timed it at a 158.3. Bear in mind, that was at the top of the mountain using an analog stopwatch, but, I mean, it was definitely sub 2.
They're throwing it around, and it has been ridiculous. The sound of that thing is phenomenal. Now, I posted a video up on Twitter, and I shared it on the subreddit, actually, and I don't think anything prepared us for that first moment when it came by at full bore.
It was just phenomenal. Like, I could lay on the ground with my eyes closed and just listen to that all day. Like, if I could put that engine in my living room and just rev it, I would.
Well, the thing is, funny thing you say about lying down and being able to listen to it. If you did that at the top of the mountain, you could actually pick exactly where else on the circuit it was, because it was that loud. You could hear it coming up mountain straight, through the cutting, all the way over the top of the mountain, down into the elbow, and down Conrod, all the way into Murray's, and you could pick, based on the engine note and the gear changes, exactly where it was.
Yeah, that's the point I was going to make. You could hear every single gear shift from 3 kilometres away.
It was phenomenal, and to think that that car is going to be Australia's newest foray to Le Mans, in a few years' time. Oh boy, I'm so excited. We actually got to see that car in the pits yesterday with the top off, meaning the bonnet. I took a few really, really in-depth photos of the aero packager at the front, got underneath the car, saw David Brabham there and was like, hey, it's okay if we take pictures of under the car? And he's like, yeah, it's fine. So he's obviously not trying to hide anything.
And it's Let me tell you what it looks like. It's one smooth sheet of carbon fiber with two tunnels.
It's so gorgeous. I love that thing. It's guttural as all hell. It definitely broke the lap record around here. Like, no doubts about it. Christopher Mies's time doesn't even matter anymore. They just had a telemetry glitch and didn't time it. Oh, nah. They knew exactly what they were doing. And
it got faster between its two runs.
Yeah, yes it did. And that was also a bit of the condition of the track as well and the conditions outside. But, oh boy, when that becomes a GTE car, watch out, world. Watch out, Ford. Watch out, Ferrari. Watch out, Porsche. Because that is going to be a monster.
I'm booking my Le Mans tickets already.
Don't tempt me, man. Don't tempt me. We'll just have a quick chat about the supports. There's four supports here this weekend. The Formula Fords, the combined sedans, the Radicals, and the Group S sports cars. Two of those are spec series, so the Formula Fords and the Radicals. Even though the Formula Fords actually had a lot of heritage cars in it as well.
So this is the historic Formula Ford.
Okay, yeah.
So it's the old Kent engines.
Yep.
Which are, I can't remember what the current ones are called, but it ends in Tech. Someone might be able to help me out. I'm getting shaking heads here.
Nope.
Hang on, I'm about to be fed the information apparently.
No.
Am I? No, this is not what that's the information
right.
I need, but that's okay. I've seen them once before. Floodmen had never seen these cars run.
Not these ones, no.
So I saw them up here at the 6 Hour last year. They're phenomenal pieces of engineering. So the old Kent engine cars, they sound like a swarm of bees when they go past. They're basically glorified go-karts. And they're divided into three categories based on the age of the chassis.
And you could definitely tell the older ones from the newer ones, because the older ones look like old F1 cars, just a bit downscaled. It was interesting seeing the differences in the aero packages and that sort of stuff, and also the differences in how willing some of the drivers were to throw them around.
And speaking of drivers, there was one notable driver in this field. Floodman, would you like to tell us who that was?
Why the hell was Matthias Best running Formula Ford? What? Like, when they said that over the PA here, like, they're calling out the drivers Matthias Best, I'm like, it can't be that Matthias Best, right? Like, it's not going to be those ones. It can't be the same one driving the Rebellion or the LMP2 guy, right? No, it's that same guy. He's here in a Class C car, but he's just like, I'm going to do some laps in a Formula Ford for fun. But
But it makes perfect sense to me.
What's it make sense?
You've flown halfway across the world, or really the whole way around the world. This is Australia. You've come to some of the most hallowed tarmac on the planet, and it's a chance for a few extra minutes there. Would you not take that chance?
Yeah, when you put it that way, I totally would. But still, it's a Formula Ford. Like, what? He's an LMP1 driver. What is he doing in a Formula Ford?
Having fun.
Whatever. The Radicals have been about what we'd expected, I think, in terms of the pace of the cars. Of course, one of the big name entries that people float around here is TV personality Grant Denyer having his first run out in the Radicals. He was paired with, I can't even remember the guy's name. He set the lap record around here in a 2:11. Yes, Brad Shields. He set a 2:11 point something or other, which is the fastest lap ever around the mountain. In a Radical, that is. So it was quite
2:11 awesome. 5:2 5:2, if you please.
That's crazy. That puts him like in the middle of the Carrera Cup cars in terms of pace around the track. So that was a really cool thing to watch. And they're a lot of fun, the Radicals, aren't they?
Yeah, it's great fun. And if you know anything about Australian Radicals as well, you'll know about Peter Padden.
Yeah.
The guy has now started 9 races here, and now he's only won 7.
Only.
Because he had a DNF in the first race this weekend, which it opened it up to make it something quite interesting in the end.
Yeah, but he did storm the second race quite easily, and it was kind of, yeah, what we'd expect.
I mean, there are penalties in terms of they have to do a pit stop, and there's success penalties in terms of time are added if you win the previous race. Not having finished on the podium for the previous one and all the other strong contenders getting that extra time, he was a bit of a shoo-in.
Yeah, but he also drives his place like he lives here, so I guess that's all right. He did do a very good job. The Radicals are a lot of fun, and they're just good bits of kit. I love watching them. They're so much fun to watch.
It is great.
The next two categories, the combined sedans and the Group S, are just really amalgamations of cars. They're one of the things I think Australian motorsport does really well. It's a run what you brung sort of category. So the group, a combined sedans is a combination of TA2, which is Trans Am chassis, chassis cars, which are space frame cars, so like the cars.
Chassis cars are cars with a chassis,
yep.
And space frame are cars with a space frame.
Yeah, okay, there you go. Two different combinations there. And importantly, I think the chassis cars have to have an LS engine in it, a Chevrolet LS engine. Because there was a few Nissans, like R34 with an LS engine in it. There was a Aston Martin with an LS engine in it, which was a bit weird. And then, of course, there's the last group, which is the production cars. So things that you would see in improved production, which you might remember from a few years ago, the crazy Jordan Cox Honda Civic, which went around the world and became a bit of a sensation. So those kind of cars. But the cars that really took the cake in the combined sedans were the Mark cars, of all things.
Yeah, it's a bit interesting. There's one individual who turns up every year with a car that's 3 seconds a lap faster than anyone else. For the first year since I've started coming, he didn't win a race.
Yeah, that was right.
He broke down twice, I think.
Yep.
And having broken down in race one, he started from the back of the grid, finished sixth or something, and then broke down again, which gave us an interesting race between the old Mark 1s.
Yeah, and the Mark 1 cars, again, everyone should love Mark cars. Mark cars are fantastic. You should love them. But yeah, it was Stephen Lacey in the Chevrolet Camaro, which has been, I think it's got a new LS1 engine in it. He was the one who was really storming the field. But I think the coolest part about the combined sedans is that you get a mix of Mark cars, TA2, which is the Trans Am cars, some old V8 supercars, Holden Monaro was in there, a bunch of BMWs. There was an RX-8, which still had the rotary engine, which that was so much fun to listen to. And they actually did pretty well.
May I say eargasm?
Yes, I'll allow it. I'll allow you to say that. And then there was a few modified RX-7s with LS swaps because they were running in the chassis class. And all the way down to like an old FG Monaro with a new engine in it. It's just a really sort of fun category, which gets you just, there's battles all the way through the pack. It's just a lot of, you'd call it a laugh, except it's more serious than that. And I think Stephen Lacey will be feeling pretty ripped off that he had technical problems twice over the weekend.
And yeah, he came here trying to set the lap record, not the rap record. Trey came out chasing that lap record. He was just about to take the lead, get some clear track and have a good chance at it, and his car conked on him.
That kills the driver, which is a shame. But the last group of support categories we had was the Group S cars. Now, these are probably my favourite support series in the entire universe of the world ever.
Mine too.
Yeah, because it is just old sports cars. Porsche 911s, Corvettes, Alfa Romeos. There was a few Austin Healeys, Di Tommaso Panteras.
Which are mint.
They were just gorgeous. There's a Ferrari 308 in the field. And again, it was a really interesting mix. Because one of the things that happens at this place is because you've got the combination of the long straights and the technical section over the top, you do get just some crazy battles between cars that should not interact with each other.
It's the closest thing you're going to get to that historic Le Mans support race in Australia.
Yeah. So what was the battle that we saw this morning? I think it had a Mustang, a
Healey,
a Austin Healey, a Porsche 928, and another Porsche 911. And I think the 928 managed to try to make the move on the Mustang into the last corner, got it a bit wrong. The Austin Healey was like, I'm having a piece of this, gets on the inside of both of them, makes the move, and then the Mustang's just like, we'll see ya, and then just blew everyone else away while everyone else was, or the other three were squabbling. It was just, it's a little hilarious, isn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately it did end with that Healey backwards at turn two, Griffins, but
yeah.
Other than that, it was really good.
Yeah, and the normally the cars that are the best in that category are the swarm of 3-litre and 2.7-litre Porsche Carreras. But this weekend was dominated by a Chevrolet Stingray, I believe.
Yes, C3, I believe. Yep.
And that thing, on top of looking planted up the top, just had a power plant on it which would strip anyone else at all, and was just able to get away down the straights, and that's all she wrote.
And the best thing about this series is Floodman's dream car races my dream car.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Wait, what's your dream car?
The Stingray that won.
Oh, okay. This makes me unhappy. What doesn't make me unhappy is that as of this moment when we're finishing recording, we are less than 9 hours away from the start of the Bathurst 12-hour for 2019. And don't those words just make you just way too excited?
It's like, it's the only time of year I'm excited to get out of bed at 5 a.m.
I could not have put it better myself. And as the sun sets over the mountains behind us, we'll bid you adieu. Thank you very much, Reddit's Worst Night.
No, thank you, Floodman.
And yes, thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. for the start of the Bathurst 12-hour. Peace out.